Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stanzano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, the needy one, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. I would ask you how you're doing, but my question limit with you is like two. I've already asked you six questions this morning, so I'm not going to ask you how you're doing. I'm going to tell you, you look really good today. The green pops. You look like an Irishman. You're looking for that pot of gold and I'm ready to go today. This is going to be a fun podcast because this is all about customer service, customer experience, and you want to be the Chick-fil-A of apartments. So I think with this author's book, I think we're going to learn how to become the Chick-fil-A of apartments today, Jake.
I'm going to be a fighting Irishman lad. Here we go. All right. So we're making it happen today. Today's guest is the author of Be Your Customer's Hero and an internationally recognized customer experience expert, helping organizations transform their relationships with their customers through better strategy, training, and communication. I hope we talk Chick-fil-A, Gino, but without further ado, our very special guest, Adam Toporek, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. We're already off to a start. Hopefully I had my resting bio phase. That's what I call it. It's people sitting there reading about you while you're on camera.
Yeah, we're off to something. So, a pleasure, well, thank pleasure to have you me. Here. Yeah, Adam, thank you so much. And why don't you just, you know, give us your background story and how you got started in business?
Absolutely. So like you, I am an entrepreneur. I am actually a third generation entrepreneur. Grandpa had a Main Street shoe store. Mom had a children's clothing store. And my father had a wholesale music distributorship, which was instruments, guitars, that kind of thing, strings. So I grew up in and around small business. And I got very lucky in that my parents were what we would call now customer centric before that was even a term, right? They just were always very focused on customers, customer service, and that type of thing. And I remember, I grew up in a warehouse. We're not really sure about the child labor laws in South Carolina where I grew up, but back in the day. But so I grew up working. I was starting at 10 years old, 11 years old, packing boxes and all this. And now we have like the unboxing experience.
Can we stop for a second? Because all right. I was talking to one of the ladies on the team the other day. Her kid's in daycare, and they can't even put the kid in what's called a timeout anymore. So all I'm going to say is the fact that you're an entrepreneur and they put you in a warehouse when you're 4 years old probably worked out pretty well, and timeouts are probably not a bad thing. Sorry.
Not four. 10 years old. But yeah, I got – no, I mean, it definitely was different. For sure. If you haven't unloaded a container of drum sets in August in South Carolina, you really haven't lived, I think. It was an interesting experience, but we have this unboxing experience now, right? Everything's very packaged. Apple's very known for everything's very pretty and nice. You open the box and like, that's an experience. And that's part of the thing.
Like your experience unboxing when you were 10 in the drum set.
Well, that's exactly where I'm circling back to. So I'd pack these boxes. I was a kid. I was older when I was actually packing the boxes. So I was probably like 14 or whatever at that point. And I'm throwing the stuff in there. And my dad walks by one day. He's like, no, we don't do that. We didn't know what an unboxing experience is. Like, you got to make it neat, pack it in nice. Here's how you pack it. Because when people open it, it makes an impression. So this is like a lesson I got early. So I always had customer experience in my blood. Then I went on to own my own businesses. And then eventually in 2011, I started blogging about customer experience, customer service, and it sort of caught on, wrote Be Your Customer's Hero, which thank you for actually having a physical copy. That's very cool. And having read it. And and now this is what I do, teach people.
It's actually an AI hologram that his thing does over there. It's not real.
Fellas, I'd like to share a story with you guys about child labor laws and my experience.
Here
and
we go. This is going to be fun today.
No, this is not a joke. This is a part seriousness. And this is a big shout out to my dad. And I was 8 years old. And I remember he bought the restaurant. And I remember at 8 years old going to the restaurant and actually being on hands and knees with Windex cleaning the baseboards. And I thought every kid went to work with their dads and every kid's dad owned the restaurant. And that carried on into my teenage years where I went to work with him. I'd work in the kitchen. Right now at 9 years old, I was using a fillet knife. I was frying chicken. Absolutely not. Would never do that now. I mean, but
it just carried videos of your kids. All right, you sent me one yesterday. You had the what was it, 6-year-old with like a hatchet the other day. Come on,
yes.
Why are you lying?
Well, in my household, we do things a little differently. We homeschool
there
the kids.
The truth comes out.
But the reason why I'm just portraying this to everybody is, don't be afraid to have your kids do a little hard work. And that really developed character for me. And that developed the love for business. That developed the love to be able to work hard and at the end of the day, make my $2 for the day with my dad and be proud of what my dad did. And I ultimately became an adult and I opened the restaurant with him. And that was most of my adult life with him until he passed away when I was 37. And then the love for the restaurant, the business went away because he wasn't there anymore. But if you're a father out there, if you have a business, don't be afraid to take your child to work. Don't be afraid to instill that hard work. We're joking about it, child labor laws, but at 10 years old, where else would you want to be? That's the best place in the world, is to be working with your family, making money, and learning some really important lessons that you'll never learn in college, in high school. I just think it's so important. Adam, the book is great. I really love the book because it's easy to read. Even someone like Jake who doesn't read, the chapters are really short. They're smaller words. What'd you say?
They got pictures in it.
No, he didn't put pictures, but I'm telling you, like, the chapters are great because it's like one lesson, boom, page and a half, next lesson. He's broken it down really, really well. But you start out with the book by saying the customer is always, and then you leave it blank. Can you fill in why you started out that way and what that means?
So that comes from my work as a trainer. I would do trainings, and one of the quick challenges, like the immediate challenges, is, you know, they say the customer's always right. That's not true. But I'm like, yeah, it's not true. You're right. You see the part on the front cover that says real world? Yeah, the customer's not always right. The customer is sometimes delusional, sometimes customer is sometimes hostile, and sometimes the customer is really nice, but just wrong. So the customer is always right came from an old time, because nobody was customer centric back in the day, right? I mean, back in the day, a lot of times you had the one store in the middle of the town, and that was it. They didn't have to have customer service because they were a monopoly, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, buy it, shut up, take it, and that's all I want to hear from you. And that's not how it works today. That's not our competitive landscape. But that idea, the customer is always right, to me, what research I could do on it, it's a teaching tool. It was just meant to say, look, we don't argue with customers. Look, what the customer's opinion is important, even if it's wrong. You have to have context and you have to have judgment and you have to apply it, of course. You can't
just say, everyone's taking it so literally, but you nailed it, though. You don't argue with the customer. It's as simple as that. But I think that the customer is always right is why that originated, because you know people would go out there and make a bad situation worse.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why that exists. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I've always looked at it as a teaching tool. And one of the first things I have to do as a teacher is say, okay, look, don't take it literally, just as Jake just said. This is not a literal thing. We don't believe they're always right, nor are we always going to give them what they want, which is also addressed in the book.
I have one comment, then my next question. You just described take it and shut up. That sounds like the government now. I mean, basically, that's a government entity. You go to the government, you take it and shut up. If you're a company that's doing that, guess what? You are not going to last. Because in the book, you always say, I love what you say.
Hang on. Can I give you an experience I just had with the government?
Please, hit me up, brother.
So my wife's like, all right, we gotta re-up our passports or whatever. And I started like sweating and getting chills because I hate going into like these DMV type places, and I get in there and the lady's like, is something wrong with you? Are you upset? And this is the lady talking to me where I'm just trying to get the passport with my wife. And I'm like, nah, I'm fine or whatever. And then there was like one little error on this like 6-page document we had to fill out. And I'm like, oh, you know, made a little error here. Can we just initial it? She pulls out another one and says, fill out the thing again. They're not going to accept it.
Yes.
And that's when I started losing. But that's the type of mentality. And that's why I start to like lose my shit when you go into these places, because number one, I hate administrative things. I hate filling out forms. And then she just slaps me with another one. I was going to like, okay, I'm going to be here all day. How are we going to get through this? Right. And just awful.
Broseph, I did that 2 months ago. There's 8 of us. I have 6 kids. All 8 of us walked into this place.
You'll never get passports because you're not going to get 6 pages right for 8 people ever.
2 hours, bro. 2 hours and $1,000 later, I got my passports. It should have been gone online.
They're feeing you to the death. Can I get a fee for the picture? Can I get a fee for the extra form? We're going to have to send it in. Like,
It was like, can I just go online, fill the damn thing out? You have my information, and then it's done. No, you got to do it this way. And I'm stuck in the back in the 1980s. But I digress, Adam. You say business exists to serve customers. Obviously, the government doesn't exist to serve customers. Why is that such a central theme of every business? We're here not to serve ourselves. We're here to serve our customers.
Well, I will not defend the government in this sense, but I will say this. I think it's less, it is the nature of the government, and they have tried in certain areas to improve, but it's the nature of power. So monopolies all act like that. Now, they may be smaller and less bureaucratic, but, you know, your power company, now, some of the power companies have made strides to improve service because of, you know, the blowback. But, I mean, think about your utilities back in the day, particularly. Even now, right? I mean, how do they treat you? You're a captive customer. There were no options. They treated you the exact same way you were just describing. So I think to some degree, it's just the nature of monopoly, right? If you don't have options, you get treated like someone who doesn't have options. So to answer your question, why is it important? Because that is not very common nowadays. We are in competitive landscapes. I mean, there may be some very small niches of manufacturing or, you know, like commodities where, okay, you could probably just get away with price. But in the great majority of industries, okay, and anything to do with any consumer-facing industry, customer experience is a competitive advantage. Sustained over the long term, you are going to win with your experience because price always gets matched. Quality always gets matched over time. The only thing you can do is create an experience and create an idea, you know, of a brand experience that is better than the next person's.
So, Adam, I have been told that I'm not the smartest tool in the shed. So now that I'm hearing this, why are companies outsourcing
tool in the shed?
Whatever, the smartest, sharpest. You know what I'm saying? You prove my point.
I'm proving your point for you, right?
I'm basically a moron, but I'm a moron. But what Adam just said, why are these companies all outsourcing their customer service to India and to other places and having it on hold for 20 minutes and transferring to somebody else when they know that should be the competitive advantage? Because if Adam knows it and he's teaching this, don't you think American Express and Apple and IBM and all these companies, shouldn't they understand that that's their competitive advantage? Why are they outsourcing this then?
Well, costs, of course. So this gets complicated. I will say, one, there has been a trend in the last decade to bring a lot of it back to countries that have either better English or back.
Or just change the guy's name.
Hey, have you been on
a
hold
lot of
with
John
Wells Fargo?
Smith sound pretty foreign lately.
Give Wells Fargo a call. Wells Fargo is not bringing it back. They're going even farther out, man. They're hard. You talk a lot of these banks and stuff. They're awful, man, waiting online.
So banks are, oh man, I got so much to say now. Okay, we'll go in order. So first of all, yeah, I mean, there is a trend to bring some of that back. Obviously not in some of the places you've been talking to lately, but there is a trend. The other trend is, well, guess what? It doesn't matter because in 5 years, those people, the offshoring is going to be replaced by robots anyways. Okay, so that's where we're headed. And again, it's going to be a cost thing. So certain companies do it better than others. I mean, I think the good companies, the ones that the ones we study, the ones we hold up as exemplars, try to find a balance between cost management and quality of service. One that I can think of is American Express. Okay. My experiences with American Express, I may not have had a perfect experience every time, but I've always had people who knew what they were doing and knew how to communicate, could communicate well about my problems and help resolve those issues. So I think, and they're a premium product, right? We associate American Express with, you know, one of the premium products in their industry. So I think some companies do it well. I think a lot of companies go for cost first. And that's what I said. I'll give you a pause, but I had more to add on because you're asking why do they do it? So I got some more on that if you want.
Yeah, go ahead. Shoot. Before you say that, I want to bash another company, Delta, the airlines.
Delta?
The airlines are the worst. Try to get something fixed. Their websites are great, but try to get something resolved or fixed. You're on the freaking phone for 2 hours waiting for them. And when they finally get to you, they're like, I really can't do anything. I'm spending $1,800 to go to Omaha from Florida, and you can't do anything for me, guys. And you have less service, there's less flights, and I'm getting reamed over here, and you can't help me out. It's just... I'm sorry.
What's up with the bags free, but then you get to check out and they're charging you? That's like the new thing, right?
Yeah, that
happened to y'all?
Oh yeah, they upsell you absolutely.
Like the last three flights that I was on, and I'm typically helping my grandmother book them. They'll hit you with it's free on the front end, and then they charge you once you get to the checkout. I'm like, I don't got time to mess around with $30. Just steal my money. I don't give a shit. And I think they know that.
That's not Delta, I hope. But wow, yeah. So the airlines are a mess. Now the airlines are an interesting experience. So when we talk about customer experience, well, because of a few things. One of the things when you look at customer experience, I try to be very empathetic towards the companies because I understand, but I have my own gripes as well, which is one, they're in an incredibly regulated industry, right? They're also in an industry where safety is the only thing. I mean, it is, there is, everything has to stop. They have to completely upend the experience for safety. Regulation. Think about the experience when the minute you start, you book your flight, all that, what Jake was just mentioning, the entire experience all the way through when you land and you get your bag and you get in the taxi or the Uber. Think of the percentage of that experience the airline doesn't control, right? Mm. Everything in the airport, everything with TSA, all this stuff. So it's a very interesting business. It's a hard business, and they don't have enough airplanes or staff right now. So it's I've always been a fan of Delta. Their phones are not good right now, to say the least. So if you've been on a phone with them, yeah, it can be tough. But you know, that's one of the things when you look at experience, like what do you control? What does the company control, and what do they do, and what do they do around that? So let's say, if you are in, say you're in some sort of regulated industry, like banking, all right? If you're in banking, how do you make the regulations you have to deal with easier on the customer? Do you Jake, do you pre-fill, if you had a passport before, do you pre-fill the passport form for the customer so that when they're there, they're approving their information and not refilling it out? Things like that, right? How can you work around these processes?
They would never.
Yeah.
They would never even consider it. They would find every reason not to do it and why they can't do it.
They must hire me.
Yeah. But it's like, find more reasons why we can't than look for solutions how, right?
That's the truth.
That's a great, I'm glad you shed light on that. I never thought about it from their perspective. I'm thinking about it from my perspective, from being the customer and not understanding the challenges that the airlines do have. Because like you said, I never thought about, well, they have so much that's out of their control. But for me, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. What KPIs should companies use? You have some in the book that they can utilize to say, hey, the customer service is working here, or what should we measure as far as customer service goes?
So KPIs are interesting. I never recommend one KPI, and it's going to depend on the situation. I'll sort of talk about the three big ones in the industry, which are net promoter score, which is how likely are you to recommend a friend or family member. And that can be either transactional or relational, meaning you can just ask the question, how likely are you to recommend Delta to a friend or family member? Or you can say, sometimes you'll see this after you've somebody's helped you. How likely are you to recommend Sheila? Or are you to hire Sheila? Though that hire is not really the same question, but to recommend Sheila to a friend or family member who has a small business or something. Like, you can do it on a transaction level. Next one is customer satisfaction. That's been around since we were all in short pants, right? I mean, that's just, how satisfied were you today? 1 to 10 scale, usually sometimes 1 to 5. The other one is customer effort score. And that's a concept I talk about a lot. I don't really use the score that much. And that is, how easy was it for you to complete your transaction today as a rule? So those are the three big ones. Now, the problem is if you put stock in one metric, you're probably not measuring everything you need to manage, right? To your point. And what really happens if you start really focusing on one metric, everybody starts gaming it, right? You've got to be so careful because employees will find a way to game it no matter what it is. I remember I was in a business where we were using NPS, and you know, what happened was, when the people came out and they were upset, the teams at the front desk would take their email out of the system. So that way they didn't get the email with the with the survey in it. So you got to be really careful what you focus on. I'd say something you're not going to hear from another customer experience person, but I think you two guys are going to like it as entrepreneurs. My number one metric is profit. That's it. It's the end metric. Your customer experience has to be profitable. And if you don't make it profitable, now that doesn't mean every transaction has to be profitable. You can, you know, you can give somebody something because they're upset and they're a long-term customer, right? There's times where a transaction might not be profitable, but the relationship needs to be profitable and the experience needs to be profitable. How you scale, how you deploy resources, the experience you deliver, all has to be profitable or there's no point because you're not there at the end of the day.
Is that why in the book you discuss the customer lifetime value and you really put a metric on that to see how much that there's, I guess the relationship is worth for the whole value and the lifetime of that customer?
So customer lifetime value. Yeah. So when I was talking about metrics, I didn't understand quite the question. I was talking about metrics we use to sort of gauge customer happiness.
No, that's great. I like that. No, that's great that you like that. I just saw in this book as well, you had a couple other KPIs that I thought that were really interesting that I wanted you to share for the listeners as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So customer lifetime value is probably one of the key metrics as far as what is the customer worth? Mm-hmm. Now, why is that important? Well, if I know my customer lifetime value is $14,000, I sell, you know, Froyo. Okay. And average customer is going to spend $14,000 in their lifetime. Well, now I know what I can pay per lead and per customer to get a new customer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So first, it's a key number for marketing. Second of all, it's a key number for experience. So I'll give you, you know, one of the things we talk about all these frustrations with airlines and banks and all of that, and remind me to circle back to the banks. I have plenty to say on them. But, you know, one of the things is a lot of times employees aren't empowered. Right. They're not empowered to help you. Right. They have to go check Jake, your experience. Like no one's empowered at the passport office. It's checklist A, B, C, D, E. And that's it. And they can follow the checklist or they can't follow the checklist. That's it. But empowerment is like, how can I help you? How can I make a decision as a frontline employee and help you get resolved in real time? So this is one way we use customer lifetime value. So I'll give you two examples. Starbucks. And this is not a formal number. I don't think they've ever spoken to it, but somebody did an estimate once, has a customer lifetime value of the $14,000 I just used as an example. When you go to Starbucks and they mess up your drink, what happens?
Make you another one.
I don't know.
They make you another one. They don't bitch. They don't moan. They don't tell you you were wrong. They don't argue with you. They're not supposed to, at least, right? You know, all those employees that could have a bad one, they just make you another drink. Why? Because if you're worth $14,000, they are not going to tick you off for a cup of coffee that costs them 30, 40, 50 cents. They're not going to do it. So their empowerment is pegged to that lifetime value. Okay, Ritz-Carlton. I've got an article in my blogs, one of my most popular articles, customersatstick.com, called the Ritz-Carlton's $2,000 rule. Ritz-Carlton empowers any employee, and I mean the janitor. Any employee without a manager, without a supervisor's approval, up to $2,000 to help a guest right there on the spot. Every employee that works for Ritz-Carlton. Why? That's a whole lot of money, right? Why? Because the lifetime value of a Ritz-Carlton customer is $250,000. So Starbucks isn't going to tick you off for a 50-cent cup of coffee. You know, Ritz-Carlton is not going to tick you off for a hotel room that probably, you know, cost them, I don't know, a couple $100, right? It's just not going to happen. So this is a way to use lifetime value to frame the risks you take in empowering employees, at least financially, your marketing, and how you approach sort of what you put into the experience.
I like that. The only thing Starbucks will get pissed off is if you don't wear masks. Don't walk into a Starbucks without wearing a mask. You'll be okay. Mess up your coffee, they'll make you another coffee. Important question for us, seriously, threats. How do you handle threats? I mean, like we have, you know, property managers in, all of a sudden a disgruntled resident comes in, they start making threats. Give us a couple examples, a couple ways to diffuse the threat and to make it a more, I guess, pleasant situation, if possible.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote a 2015 Hero came out. I was writing it in 2014. And, you know, the world is significantly crazier now, I think. So all the principles are the same. I don't know if you need to be a little more careful nowadays, but you know, I come from retail, and we always had to be aware of threats, right? I mean, I've called the police before, I've had people trespassed, you know, I've done all that stuff. So with threats, I mean, the first thing is you've got to have the good customer service skills in general. You have to know how to communicate. You have to know how to have empathy. You have to know how to listen, right? To try to diffuse situations. The goal is to get to where there's no threat. The goal is to diffuse situations before someone threatens you. Mm-hmm. Once someone threatens you, you have to start drawing lines, okay? Because some people will threaten, just they're just going off, right? And they don't really mean it. La, 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 I'm going to sue you, okay? Our rule, right, in retail was, okay, as soon as somebody says that, if you don't think they were serious, then you give them a second. You say, look, now I'm trying to help you out here. I want to resolve the situation for you. But now you're mentioning lawyers and lawsuits. Okay. If that's the case, I'm going to need to end the conversation. Are you serious about that? Or would you like me to continue trying to have a conversation with you? Because once they mention a lawyer, that's it, right? Or a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. That's it. But you give them a chance, because a lot of times you have to use your judgment. Did they just say it in the heat of the moment? But if they're serious, oh yeah, I'm going to see you. All right, thank you so much. Have a good day. You can be in contact when you need to be, right? I mean, mm-hmm. That's it. Because after that, they've changed the playing field. Now we're not doing customer service anymore. Now we're doing legal. Mm-hmm. Physical threats. Those are also very scary, very worrisome, particularly for frontline employees. I mean, it is amazing to me progressively what people feel entitled to do and say to people, but just because they have on a service uniform, they think they're somehow deserving of, I don't know what, right? Deserving of abuse. So I think it was physical threats. I think, again, you can try to gauge the context in which it was made. You know, they're going to kick everyone's ass. Okay, wait, no, that sounds like a general statement. Maybe it's not a threat. They're just railing. Say, sir, you're mentioning that threatening. I'm a little worried. I'd like to have a nice conversation with you. I'd like to continue trying to help you, but I can't do that if there are going to be threats. And a person may wake up and be like, yeah, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, right? Person doubles down, person starts threatening. You know, if you're a frontline person, you bring in the manager. If you're a manager, you've got to make a decision in the spot. You know, it may be time to call the police, or to at least threaten calling the police. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I want to be very clear here. Physical threats are no joke. There are security experts. I am not one of them. Okay. So for anybody who's listening that is ever in that situation, your company should have good policies and procedures. And for us as business owners, Gino and Jake, it's important to train our teams what to do, to have a policy and procedure. We had one, somebody threatens a lawyer, X. Somebody threatens you physically, Y. So threats are tough, right?
Last question before we go to the short answers. Social media, how have you been able to use social media in as far as customer service goes? Because there's a lot of reviews out there on Google. You have people on Reddit ripping you. I mean, it can be really challenging out there. Any thoughts on social media?
In what context? Like, just how to manage
trying to get in front of it. I mean, for us at Jake and Gino, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is we have about 250 5-stars. We have you can go online and scour the internet. There's not one negative review about us, because I really, we want to have that customer experience. We really go that step ahead. And when you have, if and when you do have a negative review, I think we need to be proactive. One of those things, when you see it, you have to really confront it. But how can you control that customer service?
Once, Gino, that said you were dangerous. I saw it on iTunes. Well, Gino is dangerous.
Well, we're talking about guns. Jake and I were talking about guns, and obviously this person didn't like guns. And we're talking to somebody from Texas. He had a lot of guns, and Jake and I were like, that sounds great. So they thought that we were part of the party, and which is okay. I do like guns myself. So what do you do with that, from that perspective, as far as having a business owner trying to control what people are saying about you online, and should you be proactive and respond to every negative review, or what are your thoughts?
You should respond pretty much to every negative review. How you respond is a big question. Now, and generally two responses is the most. Don't ever get into an extended discussion. Here's the thing. The first thing you have to remember is you're not responding to the review. You are giving a performance in front of an audience of everyone who is reading that thread and everyone who will read that thread in the future. Mm-hmm. You are not just talking to that person. That is the most important thing to remember. You are talking to the customer base. You are talking to all your potential customers. So if you want to, this is the customer is always right. We have come full circle, gentlemen, because If you want to argue and prove you're right, well, that's what they're going to see. Now, does that not mean you don't make your points and don't say, but how you do that has to be very, careful, right? It has to be very judicious because you are responding, on a Jumbotron, I believe is the term I use in the book, right? You're responding on a Jumbotron. Everyone's looking at it. So first thing is do address factual errors. Be empathetic and understanding. If you need to, you can, use sort of a Dale Carnegie language, we'll call it, right? I mean, sort of, you're just like, we understand that you're upset. Not we understand that you're a raging lunatic, because we're not going to say that, okay? We say that to each other after we finish typing, but we don't say it when we're responding. And next thing is, if they keep coming back, they come back one more, then you generally can close out with a second comment. Well, we've really tried. Please contact us directly. Give them some manner to contact you offline. Try to direct it offline. And sometimes you just got to take the hit, though. You can't, you mentioned the word control. You cannot control it. You can react to it. And the only way you control it is do what you two guys have done, apparently, which is give great experiences to begin with. So there are just very few people inspired to write you a negative review.
Thanks for sharing that with me, because that really actually helped me, because I always, you take it personally and then you want to continue the dialogue and you never think about everyone else looking at that thread and having the empathy and not trying to go too long-winded. So those, I mean, for anybody listening to this, if you want to go back and listen to what Adam said, it's just changed my whole mindset on what I need to do going forward as far as addressing those negative comments. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Well, thank you. And you prompted, I'm going to just have one little sentence to add on. You prompted something when you said that, and step away when you have that emotional reaction. Yes. Yeah, we take it personally. Step away. Cool down. There's no law. You have to answer it in the next 10 seconds. And then, like you said, go forward from there.
I like that.
All right, gang, let's take a quick timeout here from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right, we are back. My shining city on a hill when it comes to customer experience is Chick-fil-A. Do you want to tell me why I'm right? And it's the grand poobah of all things business.
Me?
Well, Gino already knows we talk a lot, so you're the guest. Okay. So yes,
it's your turn. I'm in the South, so we know Chick-fil-A well down here. The drive-through, the double drive-through at the one near my house is around the building every day, and they still move you through, at an incredible pace. So what Chick-fil-A does, and I have a dog in this hunt, I'll just be straight up about it, because we are a training company, they train. They train their people on values. They train their people on the very famous phrase, my pleasure, right? Not okay, it's all right, right? They all say my pleasure.
No problem, bro.
Yeah, no problem, bro. Exactly, right? They train all these young, and by the way, everyone's complaining, oh, the young kids don't want to work, young kids and their phones, and there's some truth to it, but guess who Chick-fil-A employs for 95%+ of these positions? The same young kids everyone's complaining
it's
about.
It's like D-linemen, all right? You got to rotate them in. They can handle about 20 hours a week. So you get these young kids in. They're not going to go on first, second, and third down, all right? You get them in on first down. You get them out after 4 hours. You bring them back the next day. That's how it's run at Chick-fil-A. They are onto something, all right? You get them in. You get them out. You rotate that D-line. That's what it's about. Carry on.
This is a football reference. I don't get, but okay. to the point is you use them well. You use them the way they want, but they have a culture. All right. Everything comes down to culture and training. They have a culture, they have training, and then they invest in it, right? They're able to have a premium product because they invest in a premium service. They build these huge overhangs, right? So that their people can work outside in the blazing Florida sun or wherever they are. They give them the tools and equipment. They invested in the technology so that people can be at your car in front of you, putting things on their iPad. You don't have to wait till you get to the window and talk through the scratchy speaker, right? I mean, just think about how innovative that is in that industry, right? They're not, you know, it's not a better experience than, I don't know, whatever five-star restaurant you want to think of. But in that industry, right, it's insane what they've done.
It's the premier experience in fast food. It's not even close.
100%. At least all the big names. I don't. Yeah, there may be some little regional people out there we don't know, but absolutely.
I heard about Pals. I think it's called Pals. I haven't been there yet. Something like that. But we'll have to check that one out. But I don't think it's nearly close. No, I don't know. I think it's the. I think it's probably the best business in America. I don't know of anyone that does it better. For you know, they get a decent price for their product. They have the best service. There's lines, you know, going out to every, you know, highway or road nearby. I don't know how you beat it. Who do you got that's better than Chick-fil-A?
So to me, it's hard. So somebody comes to me and say, Adam, we need your help with our customer service. The first thing I ask them is, what is your industry? So for me, everything's industry relative. It's hard.
No. Take a stand, man. Who's the best?
No, I'm not being. I'll tell you.
No dodging on this show. All right.
I'm not ducking. I'm giving a methodology for evaluation. But in that industry, 100%. In the food industry, I would say Chick-fil-A has got to be up there at the top. No, absolutely. I mean, they're incredible, and what they do is the things we teach. Right.
So,
who's the shining example, Adam? Who's if you say like if all companies need a model to be like this organization when it comes to service, who's that company?
Oh, I mean, it's hard because I feel I'm gonna say Ritz-Carlton, but that's an insanely premium product. They have margins. You can do a lot when you have margins, right?
I mean, so he said, make that money, Gino.
Exactly. Well, I mean, seriously, you right, a premium product gets premium service, but it's because you have the margins to provide premium service. I mean, I'm just a realist about these things. It's tougher to provide incredible service when you're at a huge scale and your margin is 2%, right? It just is. So Chick-fil-A, absolutely incredible. I would definitely put them in my my Hall of Fame. How's that?
Give me the top five. You got Ritz-Carlton,
oh God,
Chick-fil-A.
I don't even know. Oh man, you're killing me here. So Ritz-Carlton, Chick-fil-A. Well, y'all are gonna laugh because you just got through complaining about them. I gotta tell you, Delta Airlines has great customer service for their industry.
For their industry.
Yeah, I'm a huge.
No asterisk. Fan. Top five.
I don't have a list, dude. I'm gonna put them up there. I'm gonna put Trader Joe's up there.
Yes.
All right. Trader Joe's is good. What am I at? Four?
Yes. I'll help you out, Adam. American Express. I agree with you, American Express.
God, guys, if this is the best, man, the bar is set very low. Come on.
No.
Trader Joe's.
Well, the bar is pretty low, bro.
Who's your top five?
There's only one GOAT. There's only one MJ, baby. It's Chick-fil-A. They set the bar.
No LeBron. There's no LeBron. There's only MJ.
And there's at times I like Ruth Chris. Ruth Chris can be nice, but it's not. It's no Chick-fil-A. All right. I enjoy it. So, I've had some good experiences.
Jake, what I would say with Chick-fil-A, more than anything else, it's not that they're the best because they're the best. They're the best because they're working with 16-year-olds and they're selling you a $5 product. Okay. With
Bro,
what they're
it's 12
working
bucks
with,
for a meal now. All right.
Okay. 12 bucks.
Yeah, it is. I'll give you that.
Okay. You put my point. Well, how much is a filet mignon? 80? It's a totally different industry. You're working with nothing. On that 12 bucks, your profit margin is 2%, bro. You're making 30 cents on that 12 bucks. I'm just saying it's an amazing model of how they're able to create that experience with 16-year-olds.
Dude, I just think a lot of – if you're telling me it's a 15% margin. I know a lot of people willing to invest at a 15% margin, Gino, so it's not the worst thing in the world.
I'll add this, Gino. Here's a big difference. We could find in your city, in my city, we could find restaurants, okay, individual restaurants that have as good a service as Chick-fil-A. What Chick-fil-A does is they do it at scale.
Everywhere, because I've been
scale.
To
yeah, exactly. No,
guys,
that's
hold on. I've been to Ruth Chris in Atlanta. Okay, with Gino, we've been to Ruth Chris
not
in
good.
Atlanta, and it was such a shit, piss poor experience. I will never go back to those flunkies. Okay, Absolute delinquents. Like, it was a terrible experience. But I've been to Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, and it's been great. I've been to Chick-fil-A in South Carolina. It's been great. I've been to Chick-fil-A in Florida, and it's been great. I've been to Ruth Chris in Knoxville. It's been great. Ruth Chris in Atlanta, you got to get your shit together. I'm telling you right now.
You're making my point. You're making my point for me. That's what they do. They have.
That's why they are the GOAT.
The GOAT. Oh, my God. I love it.
All right. So when you want to start to scale up your operations, your customer experience, where's a great place to start? Because it can be very intimidating. Where's a small sliver where, like, this is a good lane to start in if you're an organization that needs to improve?
When you say a lane to start in, do you mean like to invest in or just how to approach it?
No. Hear me out. So you have an organization, you're you know, CEO, and it could be 5-person, 10-person, 100-person group, but you know you have a customer experience problem and you need to start somewhere. Where is the starting point here?
All right. There you want to start with designing what your ultimate experience is. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you want to say what is the experience we want. Yeah. Well, this is more a goal. Framework's next. So the goal, like, what is the goal? What is the experience? If we do a thing called customer journey mapping, where you actually map out the experience. You talk about the emotion at each touch point, the friction, all these different things. But what is that ultimate experience? What is that like? The unboxing, what is it? You know, what is it going to be? Then, to your point, what we need to do is, how do we deliver it? And if we're growing, if you're trying to scale up, as you're asking about, Jake, how do we put it in a manual? Not everything, because you have to have improvisation and empowerment. But how do we create? What are the steps? What is the framework? You know, what does the handbook look like that gets us there? Okay, are we going to have the 10-5 rule? Which the 10-5 rule is, you know, say you're at Home Depot or something. Every time somebody's within 10 feet of you, you smile. If they're within 5 feet of you, you greet them. Okay, it's not a magic law, but it's like, it's a service standard. What are our service standards? So that's where I would start, Jake.
So maybe even before that, what's the best identifier to know you have a problem?
Complaints. I mean, quite frankly, I mean, complaints, or it depends on your business, but I'd say either complaints or a lack of repeat business. Right.
So it could be financial, or it could be like online Google reviews or something if you're seeing it come through.
Exactly. I mean, what are we looking for? We're looking for retention and share wallet and referrals. I mean, those are the financial goals of customer experience come down to: they stay longer, they spend more, and they tell other people about it. Right. That's sort of like the triad. If you get those three things, boom, you have a great experience and you have a great business, most likely. So is any of that happening? Where is it failing? And then if you do have customer feedback, if you do have negative reviews or just so-so reviews, right? What are they telling you? What are they telling you about the experience? Okay. Every time I go in the office, you know, nobody looks me in the eye. Nobody answers me. People are on their phone. Well, then, you know, you've got a problem with your staff, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got to listen to the data.
Jake, I'd like to ask Adam a question. He just mentioned referrals. They're the best source of business because there's no marketing dollars involved, and they're probably the easiest customer to get. Any tips on trying to build a referral system based in your business of trying to solicit more referrals from your customers?
Yeah, I mean, one, you have to have the experience to make them want to refer you. So
yes,
come full circle there. That should be pretty obvious. It'll also depend on the industry, how you approach that, right? A retail, if it's retail or you're at scale, you're going to end up doing it by email. But anything you can do that's personal, if you have a smaller enterprise, right? Just asking someone really straight up at the right time, in the right context, so they don't feel pressured. You know, generally right after that glow, I think timing is very important with referrals, mm-hmm. right? Right after that, the glow of a great experience, right after they give you a compliment, that was so amazing. Wow, we would love it if you would maybe tell some other people in your industry. If you're B2B, it's going to be different. But if you tell some other people, of your colleagues, or tell your friends, right? So I think timing is really important. The more personal you can make it, the better. Mm-hmm. But that obviously will be challenging if you're a target. And then that's pretty much it. Then you really just have to adapt it to your customer base.
Okay. I'm going to personal. Thank you.
Personal gripe segment here. Love ENPS. You know, we use it. NPS, ENPS, whichever you want to go with. Can they just simplify it, make it like 0 to 100? All right, because I got to go back and like check and like good is 0 to 30, great is 30 to 50. Guys, simplify the experience for crying out loud. I don't know. How do you feel about that, Adam?
I never got too confused by 1 to 10, but.
It's not 1 to 10. The ENPS or the NPS experience is like good is 0 to 30. It's actually negative 100 to 100. Look at this. Train the trainer day, folks. Bring it. Hey-o.
That's the calculation. The people give you a score of what you're talking about, the calculation.
When I get the score on my end and I see whether what my employees are saying or what the customers are saying, it's on a negative 100 to 100 basis. So like to 30 is classified as good. Detractors, I think, are somewhere negative to, below zero. Okay. So I don't know.
You're talking about the score. I thought you were talking about the smiley face
1 to 10. Like, yeah, we can handle that.
I got you. All right. So the score, so the way it works is 7, they have been, you can find about 70 million pages on Google complaining about the NPS metric.
Maybe
and
they got
calculated.
A customer experience problem.
Well, actually, Fred Reicheld, who was one of the people who developed NPS, actually just came out with a book. Might be good to have him on the show. We had him on our old podcast back in the day, or last year, not back in the day, addressing some of the challenges with NPS. Not the scoring, though, I don't think. Just for people listening, 7 to 8 is neutral, 9 to 10 is a promoter, and everything below is a detractor. So you can have a negative NPS and it can be frustrating to deal with those numbers. Jake, you are not alone. That's all I can tell you.
That's my customer experience. What's the best way, Adam, for folks to get a hold of you, the main hub, if they want to take the next step and get their customer service game on?
First of all, appreciate you having me, man. This was so much fun. Y'all are great. CustomerStatistic.com is home base. Site's a little bit under construction now. So if for some reason something breaks, feel free to, I don't know when this is coming out, but feel free to hit us up on LinkedIn or on Instagram at Adam Toporek CX. Make sure to put the CX at the end, Adam Toporek CX. And that's all. Yeah, love to connect with people, any of your listeners, and keep the conversation going.
All right, Gino. Step up to the plate.
You have a young Adam, 10 years old, packing boxes, just throwing crap in boxes. And his dad walks by and goes, Adam, what you doing, brother? You can't be doing that.
Come on,
you gotta
bro.
Pack them nice. What is his words? We are customer-centric here. Before, customer-centric was sexy, right? And then all of a sudden, Adam says, wow, I got a business. I'm gonna become a customer service expert as I grow older, as I grow up. And I'm gonna write a book. And I'm holding the book up right here, Be Your Customer's Hero. And it really is an amazing book. What I loved about it was simple. If you're struggling with customer service, if you're struggling on where to start, if you're struggling on how to manage that customer experience or the KPIs, it's in the book. We just scratched the surface of the book. I'd go out, take a look at the book, Be Your Customer's Hero, buy it on Amazon, and start that journey, because one of the most important metrics that Adam said about customer service is profit. Sometimes that's a bad word, but if your customer service sucks, your profit's going to suck. So if you want your profit to get better, improve your customer service. Go out and buy the book.
Woo! Make that money and make people happy, Gino. It sounds like you're making America great again.
Hope so.
All right, gang. Hey, really appreciate today. As always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. See you next time.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you. I appreciate it.